Good afternoon. This is Gail Sylvia, your host of SylviaGlobal.com. Thank you for joining me today. We land in New York with the founding director of the New American Leaders Project. Her name is Sayu Bojwani, and she is the founding director of the New Leaders Project. And they are a national organization specifically focused on preparing first and second generation immigrants for civic leadership. Thank you so much, Sayu, for being with us this afternoon. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
It's my honor. I'm excited about the information that you're going to bring to listeners around the world, especially because the United States, our role as a leader and the influence, I think, that has been overlooked of immigrants in our country, and that this changing demographics in the leadership capacity is worthy of a conversation today. I think it also will elevate an understanding of the power and clout that immigrants bring to leadership in America. Can you tell us about your background and what prompted you to start the New American Leaders Project?
Sure, happy to do that. So I actually am an immigrant myself. I was born in India but grew up in Central America, so by the time I moved to the United States, I was a twice migrant, if you are familiar with that term. But so I came to this country myself as an immigrant and had to navigate the process of the academic process and the employment process as well as the civic engagement process. And for me, that was, you know, it was in that order. I first was a student, and then I got employed, and then it took another decade or so before I would have described myself as fully engaged with this country's civic process. And I think one of the reasons that I started an organization like the New American Leaders Project is to be able to help to speed up that process for my fellow immigrant communities. But the other reason, I would say, is that it became clear a few years ago in the 2008 elections and then certainly in the 2010 elections that immigrant communities have a significant role in affecting the outcome of elections. And what I started to think about with other colleagues of mine who were concerned about the kind of xenophobia and racist rhetoric and then the legislation that was coming out of that in some parts of the country was how we as immigrant communities could not just mobilize for candidates of different backgrounds other than our own, but that we could also grow our own candidates who come out of our own experiences and our own communities, and having those individuals on the ballot would help to mobilize us to be more engaged in the civic process. So that's really the personal and professional, if you will, impetus for the New American Leaders Project.
How old were you when you first arrived in the United States? And how old were you when you arrived in Central America?
I was 3 when I got to Central America, and I was 17 when I came to the U.S. for really to go to college.
And at what point did you become engaged in civically?
Well, you know, it's funny. I always say that there's a part of me that I'm not sure if I started a nonprofit because I had made the decision to really put permanent roots down in the U.S., or if it went the other way. You know, maybe it's after I started the nonprofit that I decided, oh, I must be here permanently. I had been in the U.S. off and on at that point for probably about 10 years. And, you know, it takes a while for those of your listeners who are not necessarily aware of the process. I came as a student, so I had a student visa, and then I got a green card, and then eventually I became a citizen. But that process took a long time. And somewhere in between being a permanent resident, which is what they call green card holders, and becoming a citizen. I actually started a nonprofit that is still in operation here in New York called South Asian Youth Action. And that organization works to empower young South Asians living in, mostly in Queens, young people whose parents or who themselves have come from, you know, Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, as well as young people whose parents or grandparents are third or fourth generation Indians who move here from Guyana or Trinidad. And so that kind of wide ranging group of young people who trace their ancestry to the South Asian subcontinent was at that time a growing population and now a significant part of our school system and our youth population here in New York. And I started the organization to help engage them with, you know, in similar ways to what I had needed, which is to sort of help educate them about the academic options, to kind of expose them to diverse employment opportunities, and also to engage them in civic work. So it was about a decade-long process before, you know, for me, it's a very individual process for everyone, I think, but for me it took about a decade of really kind of owning my sense of place here in the U.S.
You made reference to, and you used a phrase that included phobia in your introduction, but I did not hear you clearly as to what you were attaching that phobia to. Can you go back and clarify that?
So I'm not sure specifically whether that was the term that I used. I was talking about, you know, just the time frame that it takes to feel that you that this is a home, that you're, the new place that you're living in is a home. I'm not sure if that was the question.
Right. Actually, I think I was believing that I was hearing you say it more around Americans overcoming their phobias with being with immigrants.
Yes, I said xenophobia.
Xenophobia. Define that for our listeners, please.
Well, so I guess, you know, again, like many of those terms, they have different meanings for different
yes.
people. But
yes.
for me, xenophobia is, you know, fear of certain types of people. And here in the U.S. right now, I think that there is a xenophobia around what people's imaginations deem to be foreign or other. And, you know, we have in this country over a long period of time imbued lots of different types of people with this label of other or foreign, you know. So however we, whatever terminology people use at different points in our history, I think it's fundamentally related to the same thing, which is fear of something that is other than yourself, or other than people who you believe are exactly like you, even though that may not be the case, right? Just because you and I are women or from the same ethnic community doesn't mean that we share the same values. But I do think that people make those connections. People assume that because I am a brown-skinned woman who was raised in India, that I might be different from someone who looks and speaks and was born in a different place, looks and speaks differently than I do. But we may, in fact, share, and in fact, do probably share a lot in common. I think many Americans share the same values that immigrants bring to this country. You know, those values of hard work and a desire for a better life for their young people, and you know, a commitment to their neighborhoods and communities, and all of those things are things that we share. But we're in a moment where I think people are really focused on the differences.
You know, America is a country that was built on, you know, on immigrants, by immigrants, and continues to be. That is a part of our legacy, is the influence and the role and the arrival of immigrants. you know, the exception being perhaps how we get here for African Americans under one set of circumstances, and for Native Americans, they were already here. But everyone else arrived at some point to this country from someplace else. And I think what continues to baffle me is that I would hope that in the 21st century, we not only understand that, but that we embrace the strength that comes with this type of global diversity here within our nation. So the new American Leadership Project, it sounds to me like you created it as a result. It was the next evolutionary step from your original nonprofit project. And that in that process of building your first nonprofit, you were trying to solve a problem that newly arrived, you know, citizens have here in the United States. And then you went out and made connections and kind of went and explored and experienced the awkward moments of gathering information for the purpose of strengthening others who are going to walk in that same path that you did. So when you 10 years later, you know, you're moving and feeling more comfortable in your skin and in your presence and in accepting your role here in the United States, you take it to a different level, and that's the political level. That's the civic, you know, leadership level. How has that arena differed, you know, from other arenas that you've entered?
So I think that there are a number of ways in which the political arena is different. I think on the one hand, you know, when you're working within immigrant communities around their specific kind of social service needs or education needs, it really speaks to a very direct result, right? So an individual has a need for a particular service, and as an organization, we're able to provide that service. And the individual and the organization and donors who support that organization can see the direct link. You know, I'm a battered woman and I need temporary housing. You know, the organization provides it. The donor understands that this is an important need for safe shelter, etc. I think when it comes to the work that we're doing now, that there's a lot of indirect impact that training and empowering young first and second generation immigrants to think about running for office. It has multiple direct effects, but also a number of indirect effects, and those are much harder to explain and to quantify. So, for example, we might encounter an individual who has been dedicated to doing community organizing for a long part of his or her life. We encourage them to think about taking their leadership skills and experience to the political arena. They feel that they're going to be removed from their community. The fact is that they could decide to run and then not necessarily win, or win a primary election but not necessarily win a general election, be able to win the general election and then get to office and find that, oh, wait a minute, it's not as easy to change policy as I thought it would be.
Right.
You know, all those kinds of things. So I think that the work is powerful both because it is so difficult and because it is so necessary. And I would just say that, you know, I think when I was doing the work at South Asian Youth Action, it was very focused on my own ethnic community. And then as Commissioner of Immigrant Affairs, I was able to do work on behalf of and in partnership with immigrant communities from all around the city. And now this is a national organization. It's national. It's pan-ethnic. So we're working with lots of different communities. I think there's a challenge inherent in that as well. We no longer, in most parts of the country, you know, immigrant communities are required, really, if they're going to win elections, they really have to work in partnership with other immigrant communities and other kind of native-born communities, you know, in order to achieve political gain. So the kind of coalition building and cross-cultural coalition building that's required is also a new arena of work for this organization, not necessarily for me, because I think we did that both in the South Asian organization as well as when I was Commissioner of Immigrant Affairs, because the underlying message is that we're all here to stay. And in order to thrive, we all need to work together. And by we, I mean, you know, immigrant communities, I mean native-born Americans, I mean people who have been here for generations, people who just came, you know, people whose children were born here, you know, all of that. All that is encompassed in that we, that larger we that needs to work together to create the kind of society that we all want to be part of.
What are some of the challenges that you're encountering within that we?
So I think one is this issue of coalition building. I think that we do, we as in we all humans, have a tendency to want to work within our own comfort zone, and that can mean many things. You know, it can mean your own ethnic community. It can mean your community organizer circle. It can mean your friends and family circle. And so I think that the bridge building is important. I think that also the other part that the other part of the work that is challenging is encouraging people to think about being in the political arena at a time when people are very frustrated with government, they're very frustrated with who represents us in state capitals and in Washington in particular. So I think, you know, encouraging people to step into those shoes is difficult when they don't like what's going on in those arenas. And I think that, you know, an additional challenge is this challenge of being able to show that this work can have an impact, because it does require a leap of faith. You know, training somebody today is not necessarily going to have a huge impact until 2 or 3 years down the line, and maybe even longer. So it goes back to the point I was making about direct services. You know, you could kind of draw an easier line between helping an individual access a direct social service and the actual success of that outcome to what we are doing, which is training somebody. You know, we might have trained somebody last year. They might not run until 2013. They may not necessarily win that election, and then they run again in 2015, and it might be 2017 before they're in elected office implementing a policy that has a real impact for their communities, you know? And so that would be that's a 6-year process. And so I think quantifying and seeing that success is also a challenge.
Politics can be so vicious and ugly. What are the incentives to keep your partners and participants engaged for the long haul?
Well, I think that our communities, immigrant communities, are bearing the brunt that viciousness.
Yes,
and
they
so
are.
I think the incentive for that we try to promote is that, you know, we're experiencing that viciousness anyway. We're experiencing the impact of those vicious partisan debates that are kind of dividing our communities or taking the focus away from the real issues. And so for us, you know, we encourage folks to think about how they can engage in the process in order to reduce the negative impact on our communities. You know, and I say immigrant communities, but actually all underrepresented communities, whether they're, you know, women or African Americans or immigrant communities, are experiencing the brunt of you know, what our political system has come to represent. So I think it's time that we all sort of said, look, you know, we've had enough of that, and we'd rather be fighting, or not necessarily rather, but fighting on the inside as well as on the outside. I think you do need both strategies. I think we don't want everyone who has progressive politics to go and be in elected office, because we need people on the outside reminding, you know, holding our elected officials accountable.
Who is a kind of poster child for the immigrant community that's serving in a civic leadership capacity? Who are some of those people?
That's a great question. You know, I think that there are lots of folks at the state and local level you know, there's a woman who is named Lupe Valdez, who is a sheriff of the Dallas Police Department. There is, there are folks in the Illinois State Legislature who have been Latino legislators who have been champions of the Illinois Dream Act. There is Luis Gutierrez at the national level. There are, you know, people who have been, there's an individual who was one of our first immigrant elected officials named Mervin Diawi, who was elected from California, who's a Caribbean American, who was responsible for some of the first language access legislation. And so they're real champions of the issues that are of concern, of particular concern to immigrant communities. And then, of course, there are other allies who are not necessarily immigrants themselves, but who are advocates for policies and concerns that have a deep impact on our communities. I'm scared of giving you names because I'm worried that I will forget someone.
No, that's right. No problem. The reason for asking the question is that I think that there is a sense of pride, whether it's verbally expressed or articulated or not, there is this internal sense of pride when non-white, non-wealthy people see someone in a leadership capacity where our faces are not ordinarily associated, and that what the immigrant community does is elevate our individual self-esteem by saying, this is on the positive side here, that elevate our individual sense of self-esteem to say, wow, they did that? You know, look what they went through, and they came here with nothing, or they came here as a student and they accomplished that. Let me keep going. You know, let me keep trying. Let me pay attention to what they represent, who they are, and what they're doing. Then there's the other side, you know, those individuals that have less self-confidence and less awareness and just general ignorance who, you know, might feel threatened, you know, by it. But, you know, again, their voice should not be the only voice on the topic. You know, their presence should not be the only presence in this arena. And I think that that's what a lot of us are sick and tired of, is that negative voice and pulling forward to the forefront voices of like those that you represent, you know, so that the rest of us can be inspired and reaffirm not only your good work and their successes, but what it does for us individually and how it influences our roles within our own families, our own communities, and beyond. And diversifying that landscape most effectively is by being present. You know, being seen, being heard, not being in a closet, not speaking in the shadows or just to our friends, but actually rising up to the cause. You know, take us through. So I applaud you. I applaud you, and I thank you so much for who you are, what you've overcome, what you represent, and how you are now building a coalition and working through the challenges within of building a coalition of diverse voices. And I think that in itself too speaks to speaks volumes about America and the processes that we have to go through in order to arrive at results that later generations will take for granted. You know, but it did not happen easily. It's because of the leadership of individuals like you and the commitment of your staff and others to make it possible and make it look easy when we know behind the scenes that it's not. Walk us through the process of how you recognize, how you attract and engage individuals that you then put on a track for civic involvement and leadership. How do you connect? How are your services rendered?
Sure. so we, I'm happy to answer that question. I will talk about specifically about how we recruit, and then if we have time, I can just quickly tell you about the training itself. So the way that we recruit individuals is in partnership with local organizations who are working with immigrant communities. So what we always say is that we're not just looking to train anybody who is of immigrant background and interested in running, but we're looking to train people who have deep connections to their communities and who have already exhibited a commitment to doing work that benefits their communities. So just by virtue of being born into an immigrant community does not necessarily qualify you to be a leader of that community, right? And so we work with local organizations. We have worked with the Illinois Coalition for Immigrants and Refugees. We have worked with CIRLA, which is the Coalition for Humane and Immigrant Rights of Los Angeles. We have worked with La Fuente here in New York. And we identify groups that have an interest in deepening their civic engagement work and in partnering with us to recruit a group of participants who they believe have the potential to take their leadership and their experience to the political arena. And of course, the individuals have to be interested in taking the training. And then the training, the initial training is a two-day program. And the key message about that training is that although ultimately we teach similar skills to other candidate development programs, you know, communications, fundraising, messaging, base building, we do it in a way that really honors and uplifts certain assets that we believe immigrants bring to the political process. And there are three particular assets. One is the immigrant story, the narrative, which, you know, something that you're doing a great job of drawing out of me, and, you know, my personal motivation for doing the work and the underlying values that that reinforce my leadership abilities and my leadership commitment. So the narrative is one. The second is the community as a group of supporters in the fundraising process, right? So that we often are told that our communities are poor and that they're dependent. And what we try to do in the training is encourage our participants to think about our communities as they really are, which is rich with resources.
Yes.
They may not be able to write $1,000 checks, but they might write a $25 check that makes a statement about their commitment to who you are as a leader. And then thirdly, the civic potential that is within the immigrant communities, which is the ability for these individual participants in our program to mobilize potential voters in immigrant communities. So traditional candidates, you know, they don't waste time with new voters because it's too expensive to try to reach someone who has never voted before or who's not even registered. And we really encourage our participants to try to reach those folks and to engage them in the process, because then, you know, if you're a new voter, if you're newly registered and you vote in my campaign, whether I win or not, you have now become part of a political process that you didn't feel part of before my election or before my campaign. And so, you know, the narrative, the voting potential, and the potential of immigrant communities to be donors to their to campaigns from of individuals in their communities are three of the kind of assets that we really try to flesh out in the course of our training and use those tools to have our participants feel that they are operating from a very strong base.
Your work is very similar, at least it seems to be on the surface, to the White House Project for Women. Are you in partnership with the White House Project and Tiffany Dufu and supporting candidates on or leadership development on both tracks? Hers is with women, yours women, and others within the immigrant community?
Absolutely, we are in partnership. In fact, when I first had this idea, Marie Wilson was still at the White House Project.
Mm-hmm.
She was one of the first people I talked to about it. And then we've had, the White House Project and the New American Leaders Project, along with other candidate development programs, meet fairly regularly to talk about our work. And we've had a concrete partnership with the White House Project in Texas, where they trained a larger group of women, and we worked with a cohort within that larger group that were who are all from new American communities. And so we have a kind of formal partnership on program, and then a more informal partnership as part of a group of other organizations that are, you know, we're all working towards increasing diverse progressive leadership, and that's women, African Americans, immigrants, progressive individuals, you know, all of whom there is a severe shortage of in our elected officials.
Your organization will be doing a workshop and training in this area, at least stimulating discussion around it with women from around the world this week at the Women's Funding Network Summit in Los Angeles. It's wonderful, and I know that the White House Project will be represented there too. You know, in closing, Sayu, I'm aware that one of your favorite quotes is from the Greek scholar Thucydides, and the quote says, "There will be justice in Athens when those who are not injured are as outraged as those who are." Does this seem to capture the essence of your motivations and the reasons for the New American Leadership Project?
Well, you know, I think that there's always people who feel that they are not being treated fairly, and I think that that is just one voice in our society. And for those of us, and sometimes I'm in that category of people who feel like we've had a fair and sometimes privileged life, it's really important that we take an opportunity to recognize that not everyone is experiencing that same level of privilege, you know. And I've been fortunate to have a pretty complex and multi-layered life, at times privileged and at times not. So I think that quote for me captures a sentiment that I think if more of us had, we would maybe have more justice.
Thank you so much for being with us today on Sylvia Global. We appreciate the work that you're doing. We applaud you. I hope that you will come back and join us. There will be a conversation coming up in a few weeks with women from Ireland, Serbia, Bosnia, London, and Tiffany Dufu from the White House Project about the work that they're doing in those nations to get more, in this discussion, more women into elected office. And we'd love to have your perspective as a part of that voice and in future conversations, as well as you continue to do this great work at the New American Leadership Project. Thank you so much for being with us today, Sayu Bhujwani.
Thank you for having me, and I'm happy to come back anytime.
Okay. How can our listeners get in touch with you, and how can they support your work?
You can follow us on Twitter at New American LP or at Sayu Bhujwani, and our website is www.newamericanleaders.org.
And this broadcast is available on sylviaglobal.com and also iTunes under podcasts. Just enter sylviaglobal.com. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day, Sayu, and keep up the good work.
You too. Thank you very much.